Chapter 16. When Creighton came in on June 24th, he found Starkey looking at the monitors, his hands behind his back. He could see the old man's West Point ring glittering on his right hand, and he felt a wave of pity for him. Starkey had been cruising on pills for 10 days, and he was close to the inevitable crash. But, Creighton thought, if his suspicion about the phone call was correct, the crash had already occurred. "Len," Starkey said, as if surprised. "Good of you to come in." "Donata," Creighton said with a slight smile. "You know who that was on the phone?" "It was really him, then?" "The old Georgia giant himself. I've been relieved. The clodhopper relieved me, Len. Of course, I knew it was coming, but it still hurts. Hurts like hell. It hurts coming from that grinning, glad-handing sack of shit." Len Creighton nodded. The night that man had been elected had been a night of horror for him, and for all thinking men. "Well," Starkey said, passing a hand over his face, "it's done anyway. You're in charge now. He wants you in Washington as soon as you can get there. He'll have you on the carpet, and he'll chew your ass to a bloody rag, but you just stand there and yes, sir, him, and take it. We've salvaged what we can. It's enough. I'm convinced it's enough. If so, this country ought to get down on its knees to you." Starkey waved it away. "One thing is top priority. You've got to see Jack Cleveland, first chance you get. He knows who we've got behind both curtains, iron and bamboo. He knows how to get in touch with them, and he won't stick at what has to be done. He'll know it'll have to be quick."
"I don't understand, Billy."
"We have to assume the worst," Starkey said. And a queer grin came over his face. It lifted his upper lip and made it wrinkle like the snout of a dog protecting a farmyard. He pointed a finger at the sheets of yellow flimsy on the table. "It's out of control now. It's popped up in Oregon, Nebraska, Louisiana, Florida, tentative cases in Mexico and Chile. When we lost Atlanta, we lost the 3 men best equipped to deal with the problem. We're getting exactly nowhere with Stuart Redmond. Did you know they actually injected him with the blue virus? He thought it was a sedative. He killed it, and no one has the slightest idea how. If we had 6 weeks, we might be able to turn the trick. But we don't. The flu story is the best one, but it is imperative, imperative, that the other side never sees this as an artificial situation created in America. It might give them ideas. Cleveland has between 8 and 20 men and women in the USSR and between 5 and 10 in each of the European satellite countries. Not even I know how many he has in Red China." Starkey's mouth was trembling again. "When you see Cleveland this afternoon, all you need tell him is, Rome falls. You won't forget?" "No," Len said. His lips felt curiously cold. "But do you really expect that they'll do it, those men and women?" "Our people got those vials 1 week ago. They believe they contain radioactive trace particles to be charted by our sky crew satellites. That's all they need to know, isn't it, Len?"
"Yes, Billy."
"And if things do go from bad to worse, no one will ever know. Project Blue was uninfiltrated to the very end, we're sure of that. A new virus, a mutation. Our opposite numbers may suspect, but there won't be time enough. Share and share alike, Len."
"Yes."
Starkey was looking at the monitors again. "My daughter gave me a book of poems some years ago by a man named Yeats. She said every military man should read Yeats. I think it was her idea of a joke. You ever heard of Yeats, Len?"
"I think so," Creighton said, considering and rejecting the idea of telling Starkey the man's name was pronounced Yeats.
"I read every line," Starkey said as he peered into the silent cafeteria, "mostly because she thought I wouldn't. It's a mistake to become too predictable. I didn't understand much of it. I believe the man must have been crazy, but I read it. Funny poetry. Didn't always rhyme. But there was one poem in that book that I've never been able to get out of my mind. It seemed as if that man was describing everything I dedicated my life to. Its hopelessness, its damned nobility. He said that things fall apart.
The center doesn't hold. Things get flaky, Len. That's what he meant. Yeats knew that, even if he didn't know anything else. Yes, sir, Creighton said quietly. The end of it gave me goosebumps the first time I read it, and it still does. I've got that part by heart. What rough beast, its hour come round at last, slouches towards Bethlehem to be born? Creighton stood silent. He had nothing to say. The rough beast is on its way, Starkey said, turning around. He was weeping and grinning. Things are falling apart. The job is to hold as much as you can for as long as you can. Yes, sir, Creighton said. And for the first time, he felt the sting of tears in his own eyes. Yes, Billy.